Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. November 23, 2021. New Life 1322. How can we restore our emotional balance?
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show, Dr. Michael Leitman. Hello, Dr. Leitman. Hello, hello. Hello, Nitzamazos. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about how to restore mental balance in life. It's not easy. We'll try to understand how to make it better. Be with us, Nitza, please. Okay, so today we'd like to talk about a state that many people feel, especially lately. Young and old people, a feeling that we're falling out of balance, a feeling that we lost sanity to some extent. And it's not because of, you know, some illness or psychiatric state, but life itself. You know, the routine, the uncertainty, our interactions with people create a state where we feel that we really fell out of balance. And you can feel it in everything practically. And I heard from many people that there's a feeling that we're like living in a kind of gray cloud sitting on our head and you can't get out of it. It landed on our head, and inside of that, our interactions in the family, at work, wherever we are, it finds its way out there, you know. Impatience, you lose your cool, you lose your nerve, you look at yourself from the outside in, and you don't understand what is going on. So what is going on? Really? We were in different states. Throughout history, throughout our development, and we weren't as pressured as we are now. We have everything. We don't feel hunger, we don't feel some big crises, you know, ecological distresses, maybe here and there in different places around the world, but it's because it's on the media and we're all involved in it. And education and the health system is somehow functioning. It's not like in the Middle Ages. And there's room for men, women. These things are, we arrange things between us, the country, everything. But probably that it is an internal kind of problem more than an external one. Humanity never lived in a way, in such a calm, convenient, comfortable, and good way as it has now. And still, we are never content. We are in a kind of collision with one another. We don't look at each other kindly. It's a problem. And I don't think that there are reasons for it, objective, external reasons for it, that come from nature or something. We see from history that there were times that were much more difficult than these ones, and still we haven't heard about people being under such pressure and stress, so discontent. And this is the matter of people that have reached a state where their ego, their desire, their demands are so great that they don't want to agree with anything and simply think that they deserve more. And if not, it's better to die than live this way. What kind of a life do you want to die from? It's better to die than live this way. What's missing? They have food, yes. Health, yes. Family, children. And you have what to fill yourself with throughout life. Even your free time. You even have free time. You have everything. What are we concerned about these days? For the air to be a bit fresher? That every time they talk about hurricanes, volcanoes, this, that, they talk. I think that it's actually... that it's actually that we bring these things from within us more than from the outside. So what pushes a person out of balance? A person can't be calm, can't be still. This is how he is. He can't be like in previous times, that he's discontent. He is discontent about this and that, and to give him more of this and more of that. You can open your computer for free and see the entire world on it, and entertainment and news and you name it, from the most beautiful things to the most horrible things. You have everything right in front of you. Have a wild time. Enjoy. So our discontent is what pushes us into this feeling of mental disbalance. Yeah. The problem is that we're already made for different life systems. It's not enough anymore. Imagine that you would have been living now in a city from the Middle Ages. What did they have there? Some bread, a few vegetables, and basically, nothing. No supermarket, no health services, nothing. And people lived. We didn't hear that they were depressed or something. What kind of show business that they have back there, or amusements that they have, that they used to chop off someone's head at the town square and everyone used to come and see, and that would make them happy. Meaning, man changed. And today, you could give him all good and bad things, etc., etc., and it's not enough. And even if yesterday, you went to some concert, or you were to the theater, or you heard classical music, whatever people like, the next day, as if it didn't happen, everything's empty again. Immediately, everything disappears. Right, that's the feeling, basically. And so here, we really need to see, what can we give a person so that he will fill himself and will be content with life? So much so that, he'll have broad open eyes and he'll say, thank you. You have nothing like that. Nothing. The only thing I hear and send to the heaven are curses. And this is a matter of the times that we're living in, that our ego grew so much that we need a special method in order to restrain it, fulfill it, calm it down. Otherwise, really, it's better to die than live this way. Previously, I said something very interesting. He said that the problem is that we're made for different life systems, that what we have now is not enough anymore. Yeah? On the inside, we've reached such desires, such demands, that our life doesn't provide us with it anymore. It can't. Take me to, I don't know, take me around the world in a plane. Been there, done that. Theater games, bingo, take me to whatever, wherever, nothing. I don't feel that it fulfills me. One way or another, there's an empty place that remained inside of me. Okay, this emptiness, that nothing makes me happy anymore, this is what pushes us out of balance? Yeah, I need some upper fulfillment and higher and higher. But probably it's something that we can't get within the boundaries of our framework. I want to give you an example. This is a question that came from one of our viewers. She writes, it's 9 p.m. and I'm in the park. I'm a mother of four. I call a friend. She's asking me, where are you? I tell her, I'm in the park. Why are you in the park? I feel like disappearing. What's wrong? Nothing special. The routine, the pressure, they're finishing me off, pushing me out of balance. I went out to breathe some air. This is a completely normal woman. Normative. That's how we all feel today. You all the time feel like you're about to explode. Someone at work says a word, at home, some situation. Suddenly you feel that the water is boiling, but no one's turning off the fire. And you feel that only if you're going to escape to some place, to move away from these pressuring people, can you breathe some air. And that's how it is all the time. It's like there's a mode in the system that's... Help us out here. It is because we have reached such desires that we can't fulfill in life. We can't. Our desires, all in all, are food, sex, family, money, honor, knowledge. That in that, you can bring all the fulfillments and desires and everything that there is. And we still have not reached a state where people nonetheless want something. There are those that climb mountains. There are those that are waiting for vacation to go to the sea or to go to some place. There are those that are waiting to fly to space. But soon we will come to a state that all of these things will be canceled. No one will go for it. No one will want to do it. I don't want to go to the beach. I don't even want to go on vacation. I want nothing. And we see how in the past it was, normal to go to work, and even in relation to the day-to-day life, kids, family, we're really about to bury ourselves. The question is, what can bring the air back? Because what she described is like a feeling of, that I'm suffocating, that I have no air to breathe. Now, where can I get this air from? That's the question, actually. How do I somehow restore balance? Or what do I need to do? That's simple. In the past, you could fill those desires that awoke in you, and you were content. So, you had desires. You felt that you want something. And after some time that you already mean to fulfill these desires, then you already have a feeling that soon you're going to fulfill them, and to some extent that already fulfills you, etc., etc. You don't have that. And there are those that say that it's because the fulfillment comes too quickly, and a person doesn't really have a real desire to want to search for the fulfillment, and then when the fulfillment comes, then he'll be really happy about it. Not even that. If we want to hear what the wisdom of Kabbalah says, because I don't think that it's possible to help without it. That's why we're asking you about it. So the wisdom of Kabbalah says that we need to understand that we have to find the solution in our source, in our origin, that all in all, the whole of nature is the desire to receive pleasure. Now, in this desire to receive pleasure, we're divided into the still vegetative, animate, and human beings, 4 degrees, each of which can fulfill itself besides the last degree, human beings. Human beings are such a creature that develops in his will to receive. And therefore, their will to receive develops, and therefore they're always discontent and never fulfilled. So how is it possible on that level called the degree of man or the speaking level, still vegetative animate speaking, how can the speaking degree fulfill itself? Then the wisdom of Kabbalah says it's possible only on condition that they will connect to one another, with each other. And then, not that I fulfill myself, but that everyone fulfills everyone else. And so, what will I have as a result? I don't understand. The wisdom of Kabbalah says, if you'll want to fulfill each other, then you'll start discovering such possibilities and fulfillments that you didn't expect to know about, etc., etc. That only this way, that as it says, go and provide for each other, that only this way will you be able to reach a state where you will feel good. But we're not made that way. The more we develop, the more each of us wants to close himself, lock himself at home, move away from others, to say, this is mine, these are my borders, and that's it. And so what do? Therefore, we need to learn how to do it. But it all depends only on the mutual fulfillment that we will provide each other with. So you're actually talking about a kind of connection between people that will be the basis for some new kind of fulfillment. And what we see in practice now is that the feeling of mental disbalance causes us to want to move away from those people that are close to us, that maybe they're the source of the problem. They're the ones suffocating us. That on the one hand, we want to run away from everyone. On the other hand, when we run away from everyone, we can't find fulfillment. It's like a thing and it's opposite. Right? So, maybe some piece of advice, something. What can I tell that friend that calls me up and says, I'm about to explode? No air. Meaning, how can we be connected in a way that, on the one hand, we will not want to cut the connection and to discover that in this connection we are receiving fulfillments that we couldn't get before in any other way? and these fulfillments, as it says, go and live off each other, that these fulfillments that we're getting from everyone, that they will be on such a level that they'll have such an intensity, such a form, that I can't get it in any other way. And then I will love everyone, and I'll annul myself toward everyone, and I'll be like a baby who's cleaved on to his mother. That I cleave on to society, to the bosom of society, and from there I suckle my entire pleasure in life. This is what we need. So the people that I run away from and want to feel most distant from, they're the ones that are actually holding my oxygen tank, only I don't know how to correctly connect in order to take a breath of air. This is what the wisdom is all about, and that's why this wisdom is called the wisdom of Kabbalah, literally meaning of reception, how to be connected to everyone in such a way that maybe I'll also give them something, but especially that I'll receive from them. And what we discover here is that I can receive from them this fulfillment that I say that we're thirsty for, that I can get this fulfillment only on condition that I give them. And this is a thing and it's opposite, that the more I give, the more I enjoy, like a mother that feeds her child, and in that I feel my fulfillment, the pleasure, that actually in giving, I feel how much I become fulfilled. Imagine that were I to say this to my friend that feels that she's really giving to everyone, the family, home, work, and this is actually what causes her to feel that she has no air because she gives all the time. Yeah, she doesn't receive anything. So how is it possible to explain it? Because here there needs to be mutuality. They also need to learn what to do to receive from her, and that she'll feel that they're receiving from her, and by that are fulfilling her, and she fulfills them. It is something that we need to learn how to do, because what they're lacking is a common feeling. This is what we have in a relationship between a husband and wife, usually, that each of them thinks that he's giving to the other and gets nothing in return. Or what am I getting in return? I'm getting nothing. What does he give me? Exactly. And she also looks at it that way, that I gave you my entire life, etc. Maybe you can give us some kind of exercise that that we can do in order to start advancing in that direction. It's something that you have to learn how to do, because it is a matter of man's attitude toward life. And after we entered life, we got tips about how to develop our ego, meaning these, you know, one-way systems. And here we need to find mutuality all the time. How do we connect mutually to each other, I to you and you to me, and in our mutual connections, precisely in the middle between us, we need to develop the give and take and give, and that there will be such relations that we actually don't need anything from each other, besides that I have an opportunity to give you, and I don't need anything from you, but I receive from you in order to give you the attitude that I need from you. What are we actually passing on to each other? Desire? Only desire. Each gives the other desire. And really this way, do we develop a good, a nice connection between us? And actually, none of us needs nothing besides the right attitude. Because suppose everyone has everything, but we need to have someone in front of me that I can give. And to give them inner fulfillment and try and give them, that they give me inner fulfillment and I put in my participation, not something physical, material, but my participation in order to fulfill them. And this way we will feel that between us, there's not only connection, but such a system of relations that we can't live without each other. Like today, that we already have a feeling that I want something, but have to get these things, then in our development, we will reach a state where I will really feel that I need all the people in the world in order to give them, to open my heart to them, to open my care, my concern for them. And what fills me then? That they're willing to accept it from me and vice versa. And then we will really reach a state where all of us will provide everyone with fulfillment limitlessly. Can you give us some small exercise in that direction?
Mm-hmm.
Practical exercise, yeah. That. Let's start thinking in the family or in some relationship between two people, or maybe several people. Or this is something that we have to see. Who are we turning to? How do we build such a relationship that people will all the time think about, how can I benefit, do good to the other person? In what way? And what sophistications can I cause good to the other and keep the other all the time in uplifted spirits, in a good mood? I examine the other person all the time. Are they happy? Are they in a good mood? Like a mom looking at her baby that's in her hands. Is he happy? Is he well? He's fattening, thank God. You know that you joy makes you fat. Now, how to bring back, we're talking about how to restore mental balance, and the exercises that I have to examine with if the person in front of me has a good mood, are they okay? You see it as the purpose of your life, and that will give me mental balance. If you think about the other person and don't think about yourself at all, that brings you to mental balance. Why? Because it is the highest, most exalted thing that can exist in the relations between people. And what does it give me? It gives you calm. It gives you a feeling of connection with others. It'll allow you to rise above your animate level. All the emptiness that you previously described, that a person's ego is so big nowadays and can't satisfy him, in the long run, can it be solved through this bypass? Yes and only. We can be fulfilled, content, happy only by fulfilling others. And from that comes our fulfillment. That's called an ol chozer, in a reflected light. If everyone around me isn't calm, and so am I, and everyone's out of balance, if we'll start playing these games that I forcefully stop thinking about myself and edginess and emptiness, and instead of that, I start looking at Nitsa like at that baby that I want for it to grow fat. No, no, she doesn't wanna. No, no, not that she'll grow fatter. But, I mean, if I take a thermometer that measures all the time how edgy am I, and, you know, it's about to break, and I pass that thermometer on to Nitsa, and I examine how can she feel better, then you live in her. This is what you need, that you're all the time looking for how to make her feel good. What will I get as a result? You'll feel good. Like a mother that is entirely in her child. So precisely that which makes me edgy nowadays, the people around me, is this where I should get the feed of tranquility from? Yeah, you enjoy others, you invest yourself in others, and that's how you live, and this is how everyone should be in everyone. That's the true mutual guarantee. So it's a kind of switch in my brain. You need to teach people how to build such relations, otherwise they'll have no future. Dr. Leitman, unfortunately our time's up. Thank you very much. Good luck. Good luck, and thank you, and all the best.
My new article on LinkedIn, when the world votes unanimously against you, it is time to wake up. About 10 days ago, the UN General Assembly voted 161 in favor of a draft resolution to renew funding for UNRWA, the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestine. Hidden within the six items of the resolution were clauses stating that refugees, from 1948, including their children and children's children, wishing to return to their homes and live at peace with their neighbors should be permitted to do so at the earliest practicable date. The resolution also states that compensation should be paid for the property of those choosing not to return. Following the vote, the draft was referred to what is known as the Fourth Committee, to formulate the resolution that will be submitted to the UN General Assembly on December 1 for a final vote. If the resolution is adopted, and it will be, it states that its recommendations are to be implemented by September 1, 2022. De facto, this means that the UN has decided to terminate the State of Israel as a Jewish state. If there is anything good about this decision, it is that we can finally see how undesirable we are in the eyes of the world, and I always prefer the bitter truth to sweet lies. I think that in the near future, we will see the UN calling on all residents, a PC word for Jews, who are not indigenous to the region and moved to Israel over the past century and a half to return to their original countries. I am certain that the UN will even assist in their return, as this is what the world wants. Despite the seemingly hopeless situation, I believe that our greatest concern and the key to saving the country is not the UN's decision but our own opinion about it. It is bad enough that the world voted unanimously against us, but it is nothing compared to our real problem, that we tacitly agree with the UN. This is why we have not protested or planned to protest, why we have no plan to stop the final resolution, and no desire to bring the matter up for public discussion. Most Israelis do not even know the resolution exists. No one will benefit from the abolition of the State of Israel. Before the State of Israel existed, we had two world wars in just over two decades. The State of Israel was established so that Jews could fulfill their historic role. Even if Israelis are unaware of this and the world has given up on Israel, the Jews will not be relieved of their calling. We are a nation forged by unity above huge chasms, and we were designated to set an example to the world that such unity is possible. That is why the State of Israel was established soon after the most horrific display of hatred among nations in history, which ended in nuclear explosions. If Israel fails to live up to its vocation, what will stop the world from repeating that scenario? If we justify our existence here by striving to unite as our ancestors did, above the huge chasms among us, we will not need to explain anything to anyone. On the contrary, the world will stop anyone who tries to disrupt our work toward unity. Just as the world watches our every move and condemns us, now that we are divided, it will watch our every move and praise us, when we are united. This UN resolution is proof that the world wants none of the myriad things we have given it. It is time to give it what it really needs, the ability to unite. And the world will be able to unite only if we lead by example. For more on the importance of Jewish unity, see my book The Jewish Choice, Unity or Antisemitism. My new article on LinkedIn, Consideration, the buzzword that will mark the change. From east to west, the world is sinking into another wave of the coronavirus. Despite the vaccines and the booster shots, the future of the world seems bleak. Until we learn the lesson that the virus has come to teach us, we will not be rid of it. We have not changed our core values, the ones that inflicted on us, the virus to begin with, so there is no reason for it to go away. Only once we change our attitude to everyone and everything around us, will we see a relief in the contagion. Why are prices soaring all of a sudden? There is nothing in it but wicked greed, an intention to make me richer and others poorer. As for us, why are we so focused on shopping? What is it that we really need? Will another gadget make us happy people? If all it took to make us happy was buying another toy, we wouldn't see more than 100,000 Americans dying of overdose in a single year, most of whom were young. We wouldn't see so much violence, so much depression, so much hatred and division. If we worked on these problems rather than burying our heads in the Amazon.com quicksand, we would feel so much better, and we also wouldn't suffer from tenacious viruses. Just as that virus has taught us, we are interdependent. You can't have healthy and content people in one place while people elsewhere feel miserable. Today, unless everyone is well, no one will be well. This is true not only of the virus, but of air, water, wealth, and every other aspect of life. I measure progress or regression by the changes I see in people. Since I see no changes in them, I cannot say that we have made any progress, so there is no reason for the virus to leave. We are still as abusive toward each other as we were in 2019, and we are just as ruthless toward the environment as then. To paraphrase the words of Albert Einstein, stupidity is to do the same thing over and over again yet expecting different results. We all understand this except when it comes to our own behavior. As a result, millions have died and thousands more are dying each day for no other reason but our carelessness. The world can provide for everyone abundantly. There is no shortage of anything, there is surplus. So why are people hungry, thirsty, sick, homeless? Why are they not getting decent education and decent health care? It is because we don't care about each other. It does not end with the basics in life. Look at the pervasive fundamentalism that has taken over society. We regard those who disagree with us as enemies of the public. When diversity of views becomes a crime, totalitarianism takes over and any means is legal to curb free thought. We may not see the connection between diversity and mutual consideration and the virus, but the connection exists. It is our selfishness. We exploit everyone, people, animals, and all of nature. We feel that only we matter, and everything else should serve us, or become extinct. When that feeling becomes intense enough in a critical mass of people, it tears apart the system and everything collapses, from human society through the animal kingdom to the ground we stand on. Indeed, try to find one area where there is no crisis and you will fail. The problem is the common cause, humankind. No highbrow speeches about equity and equality will change the fact that we hate each other. Until we realize that we are different and must nonetheless allow everyone to be who they are, we will not begin to change things for the better. The buzzword that will mark the beginning of change is consideration. Until we learn to be considerate toward others, the world will not be considerate toward us. My new article on LinkedIn, Likelihood of Second Holocaust Increases. About 2 weeks ago, The Guardian published the results of a survey commissioned by the Conference on Jewish Material Claims Against Germany. The survey found that just over half of Britons did not know that 6 million Jewish people were murdered during the Holocaust, and less than a quarter thought that 2 million or fewer were killed, a new survey has found. The study also found that 67% of UK respondents wrongly believed that the government allowed all or some Jewish immigration, when in fact the British government shut the door to Jewish immigration at the outbreak of the war. Even more disconcerting is the fact that 56% believe that something like the Holocaust could happen again today. Surveys conducted in other Western countries found similar results. The writing is already on the wall. Will we read it in time? When we consider what is happening in Poland today, the soaring anti-Semitism in Germany, the rapid Islamization of France, Britain, and other countries, it is clear that soon, there will be no need to ask people their opinions about Jews. They will show their hatred very openly and very violently. If we could plead ignorance before and during World War II, we cannot plead it now when everything is caught on video, often in real time. Nothing has changed over the past 80 years. Just as the most enlightened country struck the Jews then, the most enlightened countries are leading the campaign against us now. The deeper the world falls into crises, from viruses to inflation to international tensions, migration, fundamentalism, you name it, the more it blames the Jews. For now, it is happening under the guise of criticism of Israel, but we should not kid ourselves, it is pure, old-fashioned Jew hatred, and it will end very badly, as it always has. If we want to eliminate anti-Semitism, we must understand its root. All of the world's problems stem from poor human relations. There are no problems other than our hatred for each other. No animal hates another animal. The hunted are afraid of the hunters, but there is no hatred among them. In fact, it has been proven that were it not for the hunters, the hunted animals would not thrive in good health. The world's anger at the Jews is the result of the vocation of our nation. We were meant to set an example of unity. We were designated to demonstrate such sublime notions as love your neighbor as yourself and mutual responsibility, which we had given to the world. But we have failed the world. Our division is not only our problem. It is first and foremost the problem of the world, because when we are divided, we are not an example of unity, but of division. As a result, conflicts break out all over the world and the nations blame them on the Jews. Instinctively, they feel that their conflicts are the fault of the Jews, even if they cannot rationalize it in words. Nevertheless, if you look at our history, see reference below, you will find that the world embraces us, when we are united, and punishes us, when we are divided. Indeed, the Holocaust could reoccur. However, it is not because the world is growing hateful toward us, once again, but because we are growing hateful toward each other to levels that the world cannot tolerate. Whatever efforts we make to curb anti-Semitism, they will fail unless we unite. If we unite, we will need no efforts to curb anti-Semitism, it will dissolve by itself. For more on the importance of Jewish unity, see my book The Jewish Choice, Unity or Anti-Semitism. My new article on LinkedIn, Have We Given Up on Happiness? A student told me that a new report claims that the coronavirus is no longer the world's number one concern. Apparently, it is outperformed by poverty and unemployment. Besides those three, the world is worried, according to the report, about crime, education, climate change, and immigration. To me, humanity seems so confused and burned out that I don't think it is concerned with anything anymore. And it is not that there are too many problems, but that there is no goal to achieve. If there are no goals, there are no aspirations, and if there are no aspirations, there is nothing to live for. You might argue that everyone's goal is to be happy, and this is true, of course. However, when we all have our own idea of happiness and only our own happiness in mind, we each go our own way and end up unhappy, burned out, and we eventually give up on happiness altogether. Therefore, the first thing we need to define is what we regard as the most important thing in life and how we want to achieve it. Afterwards, we can determine what will help or hinder us in achieving the goal. Our first task is to recognize that the whole world is interconnected, as demonstrated by the numerous global crises. Personal happiness that ignores the happiness of the rest of us is a prerogative we no longer have. Therefore, we must come to define happiness as the happiness of all people, or at least we should strive to do so. Only if we progress in this direction will we make real progress toward happiness, since it will have the support of the entire society. Once we realize that this should be our goal, and start working toward it, things will improve not only for people, but for the entire planet. If we are convinced that we must look after the well-being of all people, then we must see that they do not suffer from pollution, that they have clean water and air, that they have sufficient energy and healthy food, and that their health, housing, and education are cared for. As a result, we will balance our use of resources and consume only what is necessary, out of consideration for everyone else's well-being. We will not need regulations and conferences to which world leaders fly in jets that pollute the atmosphere to make hollow speeches. We will regulate ourselves because of our awareness that our own happiness depends on the happiness of everyone else. In other words, we will achieve sustainability and build a happy life for ourselves if we focus not on preventing pollution and curbing emissions, but on mutual consideration and caring for each other. This is the only way we can find sustainability and happiness in today's world. My new article on LinkedIn, No Choice But to Start Monitoring Content. With every passing day, the situation worsens. Violence is growing everywhere, people feel unsafe, depression is soaring, and deaths by overdose have reached inconceivable numbers because people have nowhere to run from the misery. During last year alone, more than 100,000 Americans lost their lives to drug overdose. Moreover, the total number of people who die because of drug abuse has doubled over the past 5 years. There is only one way to put a stop to it: start monitoring what we feed into people's minds. Call it censorship, monitoring, regulation, or whatever, but the lack of control over the content that people consume causes them to act in ways that end up killing them. Until a few centuries ago, child rearing was the sole responsibility of parents. Since the Industrial Revolution, schools began to develop and the state began to assume responsibility for children's education, while the ability of parents to determine their children's upbringing waned. When mass media began to develop in the 1950s, children began to receive much of their education from entertainment and news channels, and even schools began to lose control over education. The media penetrated our homes, reflecting whatever messages it chose to show young and susceptible children, as well as unsuspecting adults, and we began to be indoctrinated through the tube, as TVs were called then. But since the beginning of the 2010s, when smartphones became ubiquitous, we have lost all control over what people of all ages consume. We do not know what our children are exposed to. Even the materials that we adults are exposed to influence us, in ways we do not notice. We can only imagine what it does to the innocent and open minds of our children. Whatever it is that they are absorbing, it is killing them. It makes them violent, depressed, apathetic, socially isolated, narcissistic, and suicidal. And it is claiming hundreds of thousands of mostly young people's lives. Deaths of young people were the sole cause of the decline in life expectancy in the US, before the arrival of the coronavirus, and the plague has only accelerated the deterioration. It is time to step up and intervene in order to reverse course. I think that all content on social media, internet sites, TV channels, and the radio must be monitored with strict regulations about what is permissible and what is not. I am not speaking about political content, but about content that encourages violence, substance abuse, and narcissism. We, and especially children, learn by example. When they see negative and antisocial behavior, they become negative and antisocial people. Parents cannot control what their children absorb from the media. They are busy working, often more than one job, struggling to sustain their families, and their children are left on their own for many hours. This is when they are most vulnerable because this is when they consume harmful content from the media. Instead of the current content, the media should show content that promotes friendship, caring, and social responsibility. If you think such content constitutes brainwashing, ask yourself whether the content we see now, with its extreme violence and adoration of egoism, does not constitute brainwashing. It is understandable that we like this type of media. After all, the inclination of a man's heart is evil from his youth, the Bible tells us, and we know it's true. So we naturally embrace protagonists that glorify themselves and we tend to adopt their values. However, we have come to a point where our corrupt nature is so detrimental that we must find a way to restrain it. This is why we must nurture mutual consideration among people. I am not speaking about loving others, that would be too much to ask, but simply about basic consideration for every human being. Even if we achieve only this, it will be huge progress. Currently, I want everyone to dance only to my tune. But since everyone wants this, too, and no one wants to dance to someone else's tune, society is disintegrating. This is what we are seeing now. If we leave it at that, we are going to fall very low, very soon, and it will be impossible to stop it. What to do if your boss is a dictator? From a viewer, Igor writes, "Dear Michael Leitman, I am asking you for advice. My boss is a dictator. For 5 years now, I am trying really hard not to tell him to go to hell. I love my job, but I hate him. He watches my every move. All his requests are not requests but orders. All conversations are only his preaching. There is nothing human or warm about him. I tolerate it only because I know I will not find such a job anywhere else. I do not know how to endure it. Dear Michael, what would you do if you were me?" My response: I would try to change myself so as to love this person. Then everything will work out for him 1,000 times better. Question: is it possible in such a state? As you see, the letter is really burning with "I just hate him." Answer: I think that on the contrary, it is in such a state that it is possible. After all, he may suddenly see that there is nothing terrible here, he just convinced himself about this, he sees this in such a way. He prepares himself in advance to hate his boss. Question: are you saying that if Igor makes an effort, a terrible, difficult, real effort to love his boss, then it will turn out that he is not a dictator at all? Answer: not a dictator at all. It all depends on Igor. Question: how will the boss see this love? Will it look like adulation or like a game? Answer: no. Igor does not have to show it at all. He should work within himself. Question: internally? Does it mean that he can repeat to himself, I want to change, I want to love him, no matter what? Answer, yes. I want to actually love him. Then everything will change. How else can we reach love for our neighbor? Do not think that later someday it may happen. Try to do it now, in this particular case. If there is a person I hate, this is the biggest opportunity to change myself. Question, is this your main advice? Answer, of course. There is nothing else. The Creator gives this to him specifically so that he can change himself and thus reach some spiritual degree. Question, can he also reach a comfortable state? Answer, of course. Question, at work and everywhere else? Answer, undoubtedly. This will have the best consequences. From CabTV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, October 4, 2021. The unruly nature of egoism. Comment, the egoism of each individual person is built on the basis of one, unique, the only one, because a person identifies himself with the Creator and considers himself as the center of the world. My response, this is our nature. Each of us perceives reality as if he is in the center of the world and the whole world revolves around him. And a person comes into a kind of contradiction with the world. How is it that the world that revolves around him does not automatically perceive his desires and thoughts? Why does this world have some movements of its own that do not quite coincide with his thoughts and desires? And so he is angry with the world. How does this happen? Therefore, the more our egoism grows in us, and it grows every day, the more uncomfortable we feel. We do not know what to do with our life, and we feel bad. But all this is only because we want, according to our growing egoism, to control the world more and more, and it does not want to bend under us. Question, suppose a certain group of people has gathered, united by some common ideas. What about their group egoism? Answer, this is even more difficult. If a group of people gathers, then they have some common goal that they want to achieve. This is why they created that group. Moreover, each of them sacrifices his personal egoism in order to be in harmony with others and achieve a common goal. And suddenly, what was good for them today is not so good tomorrow, and the day after tomorrow is even worse. After all, everyone's egoism grows in its own direction. They do not make corrections to it, they do not work to constantly get together and adjust their connection all the time. And it turns out that after a while they do not see at all where they are, why they are in connection with these people, and what is happening here. That is, we do not understand the nature of our egoism, how it can be corrected, and how to connect above it in order to maintain our relationship. From CabTV's Conversations, November 1, 2021. The best years of life. Question, some researchers consider the ages between 30 to 34 to be the best years of a person's life. From about 45 to 55, people experience the greatest stress, which weighs heavily on them. People feel satisfied before the age of 45 and after 55. At 75, the satisfaction curve has a sharp drop. Surprisingly, almost none of the respondents called childhood the best years of their lives. What period of life would you call the best? Answer, I have a different measuring scale, different values, so I can't say. It is not childhood, youth, adolescence, nor growing up. The best years were when I met my teacher, when I was completely financially independent and could work only on my spiritual growth. Comment, this determines the best years, although it was a time of ascents and descents. My response, but there were spiritual, not any other kind. They were not physical or material. Question, so when a person determines the purpose of his life, the best period of his life starts with and continues from that moment on? Answer, yes, and age doesn't matter. Question, does it go on and on? Answer, I believe so. Yes. This period has not passed for me yet. I hope it doesn't end before the end of my life. I'm still planning something, awaiting things, etc. In this sense I am at a certain advantage compared to most people who determine what was good and what was bad. I believe that a person should achieve such an attitude to life, even taking into account the whole situation that exists around him, and where he is generally happy. If he holds on to some enduring values, then we can say that he is happy. Question: and it doesn't matter whether diseases befall him, or God knows what else happens? Answer: yes. He relates to the upper management, therefore it does not bruise or destroy him, he doesn't fall. He perceives it as a necessary condition for his further inner growth. Question: in other words, this is good advice to a person: find something eternal and indelible, hold on to it, and then there will be no such thing as a good or bad period in life? Answer: no. It's not up to us, it depends upon the root of our soul. We have nothing to complain about. We should simply try, under any circumstances that manifest themselves, to keep a certain course of realization of our inner program. Question: can we say that each person has his own purpose in life? How can we determine it? Answer: by realizing the root of your soul. Because the body and the whole environment that is around us, is only there to supposedly interfere with us, but in fact it is so that we realize ourselves, our spiritual root. This is given to everyone. But only if a person wants it. From CabTV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, October 7, 2021. Obeying the Creator unquestionably. Question: who are the spies that Joshua sends to the / and of Israel and whom Moses also sent at his time? Answer: spies are not a good idea. If the Creator said that this land is yours, you should go there without asking anyone and without sending anyone ahead. However, since it was necessary to somehow show the people where they were going, they sent scouts to bring some news from the side where the people had to move. But if the Creator has commanded that it is necessary to conquer this land, then it is useless to send spies. You have to go and act. Therefore, the transgression for sending spies will be manifested for a long time in the people of Israel as a misconduct. Question: is this some kind of weakness within us? Answer: yes. Why do you want to check what is commanded of you? Is it in order to make sure that this is really good for you? Comment: still, it is surprising that this was done by such leaders as Moses and Joshua bin Nun. My response: even more so. From CabTV's Secrets of the Eternal Book, September 13, 2021. Both medicine and poison. Question: what topic can immediately capture people at the first lesson on integrated education? Answer: if people want to discuss something in accordance with the integrality of nature, then first they need to learn the rules of the workshop, compliance with the rules of behavior in the circle. After becoming somewhat similar to this nature, they will only gain from proper interaction with each other. At the first workshop, they are usually given questions for discussion to reveal the nature of man. What is the basic essence of a person? Why do I love someone and not someone else? Does it come from your inner qualities or because I am so bad and he is so good? And so on. Through discussion, people themselves come to the conclusion that each of us is an egoist. This is a statement of the fact of our nature. Although physiologically we are all animals, there is an additional component in us, our egoism, which is evil in everything. So, this is already a diagnosis. But is there a cure for it? What do we get if we get cured? Maybe, thanks to egoism, I'm rushing forward, ascending, rising, exploring, my eyes are burning, I want this dish, this partner, this vacation, etc. And without it, what is the taste in life? Which means, the ego has positive and negative sides, and they need to be balanced somehow. At the same time, we do not destroy egoism in any way, but only use it correctly in order not to lose. Where it harms me, I will make an inversion in using it and rise to a better outcome. And where it helps me, why not? If, looking at you, I envy that you are so athletic, then I also start running in the morning. Or, looking at someone smart, I start learning. In these cases, egoism is our helper. Our attitude is neither yogic nor anything similar to that, where everything is put on the suppression of the ego. We do not suppress or annul it, but only use it correctly. And then it turns out that there is a medicine inside egoism, like in a snake, both medicine and poison. From CAB TV's Through Time.